are certainly feeling good here on this Sunday morning. Welcome into WEEI just after 10 a.m. on Sunday, July 6th, 2025. My name is Dan Ball. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here on Boston Sports Original. Hello and good morning to those joining here on 93.7 in the greater Boston area. Hello as well to those joining on our affiliates in the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Worcester, Portland, Maine, as well as Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. All of you can join the conversation as well as those listening on the free Odyssey app at 617-779-7937. That is the phone number to call and to text to join the conversation here. I'm taking you up until Red Sox baseball this afternoon. 12:35 is when the pregame will take over. I'll have you for that as well, as we'll get you ready for game three between the Red Sox and the Washington Nationals. Tell you what, if Red Sox baseball felt like it has the last 48 hours, then we'd be a lot happier collectively here this summer in Boston. But we'll take you up until that game number three. Garrett Crochet on the mound looking for the sweep. A rare game for Crochet where he's pitching after a Red Sox victory versus a loss. He's really kind of exercised every single muscle of being a Red Sox ace so far through the halfway point of his first season in Boston. He always seems to pitch coming off of a loss, and he always seems to pitch when the Red Sox don't give him any run support. Last week was certainly an anomaly in that regard, where they were able to score early and often in front of Crochet. But he starts against a fellow left-hander who is making his major league debut. That's Shinosuke Ogasawara is how you say that. I wanted to practice that on this show before I do it on the pregame show. But he's making his major league debut. They signed him out of Japan after last year. He throws like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, and I saw he throws a curveball 66 miles an hour, something like that. So it's going to be a bizarre lefty-lefty matchup today for the Red Sox, but we'll get you set for all of that. Later on in the program, a couple notes on the Red Sox free agents as well as their prospects. And my man Jacob Lasner, who's behind the glass, is going to jump in on that. By the way, good morning, Jacob. How are you?
I'm fantastic this morning, Dan. How about you?
I'm doing great. Love the energy on that side of the glass. Jacob was riding with KJ. He'll be with me up until 12:35 as well. So the two of us will jump in on where the Bruins are to this point in their offseason, as well as a note from Greg Bedard on where the Patriots stand in their decision-making for their wide receiver room and who may be on the outside looking in. Mutual interest between Dame Lillard and the Boston Celtics. The latest reports from the Boston Globe on that as we get you ready for Red Sox baseball. And that is where we will start with the Boston Red Sox here on this Sunday morning, who, just before we get into the many, many moving parts of where this team is headed over the next couple of weeks, it's been really refreshing to see the way that this team has scored in the last five games. And I know that this doesn't fix the atrocities that have taken place this year. This doesn't fix the years of lackluster spending and the years of defensive mishaps and base running mistakes and the 19 one-run losses. Five games does not fix what has been a scourge on Red Sox Nation since the end of the 2021 season, and I know that. But isn't it just nice to come off of a couple of games in a row where you watch all nine hitters in your lineup contribute, you watch good, clean at-bats, and you watch line drives from your hitters? It hasn't been a home run fest the last week. It's just been guys looking to make solid contact and get on base, and then maybe steal a base, and then maybe move the runner over, and then you score a run, and you keep scoring runs. You don't just score in the first inning and then just say, well, hopefully two runs is enough, Garrett, good luck. No, it's actually continuing to score. And, you know, and when teams are on the ropes, you don't give them a break. You actually, you know, you put the foot on the metaphorical throat, and then whatever happens, happens. So it's been refreshing to see what the last week in Red Sox baseball has been like. It's not an excuse. It's not solving and making up for everything, but it's been fun. And it has also intensified the conversations of, so what does the trade deadline look like for the Boston Red Sox in 2025? So Craig Breslow, now probably about a week and a half ago, went on the Nesson broadcast and made certain comments about how the team is going to be spenders at the deadline, how they're going to add. And then Sam Kennedy followed up on the Greg Hill show earlier this week and said that the Red Sox have the quote-unquote blessing from ownership to be spenders at the trade deadline. To, I don't know, go full throttle at the trade deadline, So that brings the number one question. And what I want to know from you at 617-779-7937 is, do you believe that? Because you have in front of you an American League East and an American League that isn't wide open, but it certainly isn't an insurmountable group of teams. Just look at what sits in front of the Red Sox. When you weigh, is it even worth spending on this team, buying at the deadline? When you go back and forth on, is this worth it or is this not? So your division right now, Toronto, 51-38. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 7 in a row. They're playing very good baseball. But we have seen this team be wildly inconsistent and not live up to expectation before. So are they legit finally for the first time in the Vlad Jr. era, or is this just a flash in the pan? We'll find that out. Are you really worried? Are you worried about Toronto in a 7-game series? That's my metric. And my answer would be kinda. I'd worry about Vlad in the playoffs at Fenway. I would certainly worry about that. But I don't know. The Yankees. Give me a break. Lou Maloney made me laugh out loud on the TV broadcast yesterday. He said, the Yankees really need to figure it out. Or they don't. Doesn't really matter to me. I thought that was hysterical, and I perfectly, that was the kind of the professional journalist Lou coming out, and then the, you know, then the mass hole and the career Red Sox Lou Maloney, or the longtime Red Sox Lou Maloney coming out there. So they're 48-41. They've lost 6 in a row. They're 3-7 in their last 10 because Jacob Lasner's Mets took them down yesterday.
Let's go, Mets.
Let's go. Love that. Was certainly enjoying Pete Alonso just teeing off on them yesterday. Anyways, also Clark Schmidt down with a UCL tear, so he's done for the season. Marcus Stroman is now an every fifth day starter in Major League Baseball for a team that wants to make the playoffs. So that's not good. The Rays, 48-41, always going to be in the conversation. Always going to be pesky, but I don't know. And I had this conversation with John Lyons on Friday. I don't know if this is one of those Cinderella story Rays teams that we've seen in past years. I just think they're a year, maybe two, away from what is just the roller coaster of the Rays. Develop your own players, get to the point where you can almost win a World Series, and then realize you're going to have to pay these guys, trade them away, restock, and then, you know, start again. It's the circle of life. They're kind of right on the precipice of being a team that, like in 2020, can get to the World Series with Randy Arozarena and that shortstop who is now, you know, dealing with some other stuff. Anyways, so that's what sits in front of you in the division right now. Toronto is legit, but I just don't know if they scare me. And maybe that's just me being, you know, wearing my red colored glasses here on this Sunday morning. Yankees, give me a break. And if you meet up with them head to head, perfect, even better. And then the Rays, again, I could see them fading. Then you have, of course, the Red Sox. Detroit's legit. Detroit is a team with Tarek Skubal at the beginning of that rotation and a bunch of young guys who are really gelling. And how about the resurgence of Javier Baez, by the way? Him even being a major leaguer, let alone an all-star caliber player in the eyes of Major League Baseball. Wild. Nobody else in the Central means anything. And then the West, the Astros are 54-35, so you got to worry about them. They're 8-2 in their last 10. Past that, Seattle, you know they're going to pitch, but they're not going to hit. Texas is a game under 500, disappointing just like you. And the Angels and the Athletics both suck. So out of all of that, you have Detroit, who, again, has done a whole bunch of nothing in the playoffs, so you have no idea. You have no idea really what they're gonna bring. They're just getting to the beginning of whatever they're gonna be. You have Houston, who is always worth keeping an eye on, and then you have the teams in the American League East that kind of ebb and flow as the season goes along. So there is a very clear opportunity for you to at least be a playoff team. Your three wild card teams right now are the Yankees, the Rays, and then the Mariners. There's no reason with the Red Sox 2.5 games back, by the way. There's no reason with the talent that you have assembled that you can at least be better than the Mariners and be a wild card team. And you really wouldn't have to do that much. I really don't believe that if you add Masataka Yoshida to this lineup, you add Alex Bregman to this lineup, that you'd have to do a ton at the trade deadline. in order to be a wild card team. So that gets us back to the comments from Sam Kennedy saying that they have the blessing, quote unquote, to spend. So what does that mean? And I looked back at last year's trade deadline when they were also, I guess, buyers, I guess. Quote unquote, buying at the deadline last year led to James Paxton, who pitched in three games, strained his calf, and then retired from Major League Baseball after his experience returning to the Red Sox. Luis Garcia from the Angels, 15 games and 8.22 ERA. He was just waived by the Dodgers. He is currently a free agent. 0 for 2. Lucas Sims, 15 games, 6.43 ERA. Stunk. Quinn Priester from Pittsburgh. Oh, interesting. Pitching prospect. Got him from Nick York, who was blocked out by the kids. Perfect. Then you traded him to Milwaukee for an outfielder. Thank God you added another one of those. God, I mean, how many more outfielders can you add to the organization? In Priester, 6-2, 3.59 ERA in 16 games, 12 starts from Milwaukee. Great addition, terrible trade away. Also, just buying a prospect with years of control. You bought a project. And then Danny Jansen. Remember last year how the cries were, man, you just really need a right-handed bat. All you have is Tyler O'Neill, and then you have a bunch of lefties because Trevor Story blows, and we just need a right-handed bat. And your answer was Danny Jansen. Danny Jansen in 30 games hit .188 for the Boston Red Sox being acquired from Toronto. And that was what you considered to be buying last year. So is it just kind of add around the fringes and try to add more of these bit parts to your mix? Or are you actually going to take even one big swing? I'd like to believe that they are in more of a take one big swing mindset this year. I really would. Because you actually did that in the offseason. You took two big swings. You took a Garrett Crochet swing, which has been outstanding. And you took an Alex Bregman swing, which before the injury was outstanding, and even during the injury. I'm going to talk about that later on in this hour, because even during the injury, I have seen nothing but the best out of a guy who is acting as if he is the captain of the Boston Red Sox, in Alex Bregman. If he gets traded away, oh, there is going to be hell to pay, but we'll get to that. So what does the blessing from ownership mean? And who's on the market? Two very interesting questions that we examine here on WEEI. Among the names that were non-Boston Red Sox players mentioned by Jim Bowden in his article for The Athletic a couple of days ago, your starting pitchers include Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins, Mitch Keller from the Pirates, 36-year-old Merrill Kelly from the Diamondbacks, as well as it was floated that Zach Gallen might be on the market from the Diamondbacks, impending free agent, having a terrible walk year. He was among those. I scrolled to the relievers because I recognized that, you know, you could always use another piece on offense, and you still have questionable starting pitching depth behind Garrett Crochet. But I think as Bayo has righted the ship, as Giolito has all of a sudden strung together a good month, and as you have Hauk rehabbing and you have Dobbins rehabbing, my focus goes squarely to your bullpen. So if you're weighing offense, starting pitching, and bullpen, my number one area to add right now is the bullpen, because you've already run Justin Slayton into the ground to the point where he can barely even play catch right now. He is, as far as I know, he's not part of the plans, at least till after the All-Star break, if not longer. You're currently doing the exact same thing with Greg Weissert. He looks like a 10-day IL stint is exactly what he needs. If Weissert didn't pitch again until after the All-Star break, I would be a happier man. Because it's the location right now. You can tell how tired he is. It's not the velocity, it's where the pitch is going. And the lack of knowledge of where the pitch is going. That worries me. You already did it to Bernardino. And Justin Wilson and Aroldis Chapman are well past 30, and you're already racking up the innings and the appearances for those guys. You brought in Jordan Hicks, fine. You brought in Jorge Alcala, fine. Those are guys that throw hard, but are they going to pick up the slack for the fact that all of your late inning guys not named Garrett Whitlock are currently kind of running out of fumes, and we're halfway through the season. You're playing game 91 today. No, you're not. So I would be calling the Pittsburgh Pirates about David Bednar and Dennis Santana, mentioned in Jim Bowden's article right below Aroldis Chapman. I would be calling the Cardinals about Ryan Helsley, see if maybe Heim Bloom is feeling generous, and maybe there's something there with the tires that you kicked related to Nolan Arenado earlier on. And I would also call the Twins, as mentioned here, right at the end, not necessarily openly being shopped by the Twins, but Yoan Duran and Griffin Jacks, or Duran, I believe it is. I don't know. There's a couple different Durans in Major League Baseball. They all kind of say it a little differently. That's where my focus would be right now, because the way that this team operates is pick a month, pick a reliever, and pitch him more than any other pitcher in baseball. Happened to Bernardino. You had to kind of shadow IL him in the month of June, and now you're starting to work him back into it. It's happening with Weiser. It already happened with Slayton. That worries me tremendously. So you're going to need some significant depth in your bullpen if this is the way that you're going to operate. So can you add one of those guys? Maybe can you sneak around and try to add something else? Also mentioned on the text line from the 978, a great point. Need a third catcher. Need bullpen high leverage if you are winning on a regular basis. Absolutely agree on both of those. A catcher is a very interesting point for this group, because you're starting to see a little bit of the wear and tear on Carlos Narvaez. He's never been nearly on this kind of pace in terms of games played at any level of his career, let alone in Major League Baseball. And Connor Wong has one run batted in. And it's not even that he's like a Doug Mirabelli catcher specialist where, oh, well, you got a knuckleballer, you got to play Wong once a week. No, he's not a very good defender. And the one thing that he brought was he had a halfway decent bat for the first, like, two-thirds of last season before you ran him into the ground too. A catcher is a very sneaky area of emphasis. So do you believe that this is something that this leadership group is capable of? Let's get the opinions of you at 617-779-7937. We'll lead it off with Josh in Boston. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Good morning. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Growing up a Red Sox fan, you know, since a little kid, I've been going to the ballpark with my dad since I was probably 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, watching them lose and lose and lose for years. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm a millennial. I was born in 91.
Nice.
So watching them lose and lose and lose, and then seeing this ownership team come in and accomplish what hadn't been accomplished in almost 90 years, I feel like they've accomplished what they've wanted to accomplish here, and now they've turned their sights elsewhere. They've turned their money elsewhere. And yes, you say don't be afraid of the Angels, but you know, we just had a 3-game series with them, and if I can recall correctly, I don't think we won a game.
No, that's true.
Maybe one. So I mean, yeah, don't be afraid of them. They suck, but you can't beat them. I think first base is still a major issue. Toro has been great, but he's also, you know, is he going to be your everyday first baseman going forward? And I'd love to think that they're going to go out and get this one big piece, but you know, I have lost all confidence in this ownership group and what they have brought to Boston. And I feel like they're doing just barely enough to keep themselves from getting run out of town.
Josh, thank you for the call. I mean, that's the sentiment that I was kind of expecting, which is when I asked the question, do you trust the information that we're being given or do you believe we're being lied to again? It's hard for people not to say we are being lied to, and the promises of buying at the deadline are going to match up with a lot of other narratives that have been spun that have then not been delivered upon. 617-779-7937. We're opening up with the Boston Red Sox as they have strung together a couple of impressive efforts, granted against teams that you should be beating, but they're winning. That's okay. We've seen them play down to competition plenty of times, so that would be nothing new if it was happening here. We'll continue the conversation on the Red Sox here on this Sunday, getting you ready for Red Sox baseball after Jacob Lasner gets you caught up on what's trending. Back here on WEEI, talking about the Boston Red Sox, who have announced their lineup for today. Nate Eaton once again leading off at third base. Romy, Will's homie, Gonzalez at second. Roman Anthony in right. Rob Refsnyder, your DH. Trevor Story at short. Jarren Duran and left Abraham Toro at first. Connor Wong, there he is. He's your catcher. And then Zaidan Rafaela in center field batting ninth. This is not something that I necessarily planned, but I was listening to KJ as I was coming in and getting set up to come in and do the show today. And that's another game against left-handed pitchers where Marcelo Meyer is not playing again. And I appreciate Nady, and I think when all of these roster moves, which we'll get to in a moment, end up happening, I'm keeping Nady in on my roster, and David Hamilton's my odd man out. I don't think that's a hot take by any stretch of the imagination, but I really like what Eaton brings. And unfortunately, for, you know, all of the athleticism and speed and infield versatility that Hamilton brings you, He's not bringing you anything with the bat right now. Anything with the bat right now. So, you know, Eaton intrigues me with his ability to move around and kind of play a little bit of everywhere. So, as currently constructed, Duran, Anthony, Toro, Narvaez, Abreu, Story, Meyer, Rafaela, Hamilton, Wong, Eaton, Gonzalez, and Refsnyder. That's your 13 position player group that you currently have on your roster. Your injured list has one guy who we won't see for a while in Tristan Casas, but two guys that were both mentioned as potentially re-entering the fold as soon as this upcoming homestand, as the Red Sox will end their first half of the season, so to speak, with a pretty decent homestand, starting with the Rockies coming up this week. The comments from Alex Cora on Masataka Yoshida regarding his rehab games first. He'll DH one of them and play the outfield the next one. Monday's off, then we'll talk about what we do. He'll be active during the homestand. When? We don't know. So Masataka Yoshida is returning to the Boston Red Sox by the time that everybody goes on their merry way for the All-Star break. The question is just when. Then, Cora left the door open for Yoshida, who hasn't played yet this season due to a slow recovery, blah, 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 to come back as soon as between Tuesday and Sunday against Tampa Bay. So Colorado and Tampa Bay are the two teams that they'll be playing. So Yoshida is one bat in the mix. And then the reports on Alex Bregman are all over the place. You don't know if it's before the All-Star. It could be Tuesday, or it could be Monday. It could be July 18th. Like, there are any number of different possibilities for Bregman. The return of Yoshida complicates things just a little bit as it pertains to Bregman, because I kind of thought you could sneak him back early and have him DH. And he can DH up until the All-Star break, finish up whatever rehab or recovery he needs to do during the break, and then you have him back as your everyday third baseman moving forward. So you have two roster moves that you're going to need to make before you even consider what to do at the trade deadline. So who's on the outside looking in? That ends up being the question. For me, the first one, unfortunately, because they do like the player, is David Hamilton. I think this is come to the point where he's just not bringing you as much as your other options. I think Eaton has earned a little bit of play here. And I think he brings more versatility as kind of that super utility guy, while also bringing you more of the offensive upside. Hamilton also has two options remaining, so you can send him back down. Just keep stock him. I'm sure you'll need him at some point. They've kept him. They've hung on to him. Everything, but I think there's a guy that could be an odd man out. So that's one. Then comes Alex Bregman, and that's when you actually need to start making some real decisions, because that's where Marcelo Meyer all of a sudden becomes your odd player out, or so it seems. If you're actually trying to value your future, because you're clearly valuing it with Roman Anthony, you played him every single day, and surprise, surprise, he worked out of his slump. He's now hitting against lefties and righties. He's hitting third in your order. He's DHing. He's playing the outfield. He's playing a good outfield right now after a bit of a rocky start in right field, despite having not played a whole lot of right field at any point. You let him work through it at the major league level, and now he's performing. Marcelo, you're not willing to do that. So if you're going to continue to screw around with him, and play him only against right-handers and play him at a position that is not his natural position, which is shortstop, then what are we doing here? Don't waste his developmental time with the major league club if you're not actually going to play him. They're acting like Meyer, when he was in minor league baseball, physically could not hit left-handed pitchers. He was roughly a 275 hitter in AAA against righties, and like a 250 hitter against lefties. That's really not that bad. I understand that AAA lefties are different than major league lefties, and Lou Maloney has said time and again that if a guy has major league stuff as a lefty, he's going to be on the roster sooner than a right-hander because it's hard to find major league caliber lefties, especially, you know, especially starting pitching lefties. I understand that. But you were so willing to let Anthony work it out, and he figured it out. And you were also so willing to let Christian Campbell work it out for 2 months, and he did not work it out, and you sent him down, which is fine. But at least you let him do that. Now you're not even really letting Meyer figure out whether or not he can be an everyday major leaguer at this point or not. So when Bregman comes back, if this is the way that he's going to be treated, just send him down. He got a taste of Major League Baseball. You'll be able to bring him back. He can hopefully be a part of your stretch run, but stop screwing around with him. I'm sick of having to have this conversation over and over and over again about all these prospects that the Red Sox do not know how to handle. They're damn lucky that Seydon Rafaela is developing as well as he is, because they tried their hardest to screw that kid up last year. He in his career has hit in all 9 spots in the batting order. He has played second, he's played short, he's played third, he's played center, and I think he's played left, maybe even right. He's moved all around the diamond already and all around the order. And it took him a while to get it to finally get his feet set, get his head on straight, and start playing well. And now that he is, now that he's your everyday center fielder, he knows where he's going to play every single day. Surprise, surprise, that Seydon Rafaela is actually developing into the player that you thought he could be, which is Jackie Bradley Jr. level defense, a 250-ish hitter with some good pop. The best defensive outfielder in Major League Baseball this season, metrically speaking. Crazy what happens when you let a guy play every day at his natural position. So when Bregman is coming back, you're obviously going to put him back at third base. Romy Gonzalez is going nowhere. He may be the safest member of the Red Sox, and he's earning it. He's earning the run that he's getting at first base, and he's earning just the general safety of being on this roster. He's been outstanding this year. So the movable parts, assuming that my pick of David Hamilton is the one to go when Yoshida comes back, that's Nate Eaton, who still has 2 options left, and is probably the easiest move that you can make. There is Abraham Toro, who you would have to waive, and I don't think they want to do that. I think he's a very, very useful bat off the bench for a team that still has aspirations of making the playoffs. And then there's giving up on the fact that you won't play Marcelo Meyer every day and just sending him down to AAA. And that would be what I would advocate for, as unfortunate as it is. If the Red Sox were treating him like they actually wanted him here, then I would say send down Eaton. That's the easy move. But they're not. So I just don't understand. I really don't understand what the problem is. If you were 15 games over 500 leading the American League East and had your sights on winning a World Series this year, and you wanted to kind of, you know, dip your toe in the water with Marcelo, fine. You just got back to 500 for the Jacob. How many times have the Boston Red Sox been at 500 in 2025?
I'm going to guess 10.
They have been 500 16 times.
That's
in 2025.
Crazy.
That leads Major League Baseball.
Pure mid.
The middest. Them and the Cincinnati Reds. I didn't even realize it at the time that we were seeing the mediocre bowl at Fenway Park this past week. 16th time they reached 500 with their win yesterday.
And it kind of felt like both teams won and lost the series too.
Yes, absolutely it did. It felt like it should have been 1.5 to 1.5 with how disappointing that last win was, or last loss was for the Red Sox, I should say. So that's why I can't square why you were good with Campbell when you still had aspirations of being a playoff team. We had people picking the Red Sox to go to the ALCS this year. And you were playing Christian Campbell every day. He needed a little bit more seasoning, so you sent him down. You're now playing Roman Anthony when you're a 500 team, and look what happens, but you won't do it with Meyer. Stop wasting my time. Stop wasting his time. Make him be the corresponding move until you figure out what you want from him, and when you're bold enough to, God forbid, play a number four overall pick in baseball every single day at a position. Ideally, I'm running out Bregman. I mean, ideally, Meyer's playing shortstop in your sliding Story, but he has also been fantastic in the last month. So once again, Trevor Story extends his stay of execution with the Boston Red Sox. He'll play short. For now, you can put Meyer at second. They did the same thing with Bogarts, moved him all around until they finally gave him shortstop, and I guess it worked out okay. Not for the Padres, but for the Red Sox, it did. Put Meyer at second, play him every day. And then at first base, either insert name of acquisition here, or I'm fine with you running Romy, our homie Gonzalez, out there more times than you don't. A Romy and Toro platoon at first base in lieu of making a trade deadline acquisition, because I think you should focus on your pitching, is fine enough with me. And then your outfield, you have to make a decision, and I think you're pretty well set on a Rob Refsnyder and Masataka Yoshida platoon at the DH position. They like that versatility at DH. That's totally fine. That's what I would do, but for some reason, they just won't let Marcelo Meyer, they won't let him play every day. Couple texts coming in. Dan, you are wrong on Meyer. Meyer probably plays second next year too. Heavy feet. Yoshida will be traded. Yoshida will not be traded. Not this year, at least. If he comes back and has a good second half of the season, maybe in the offseason, Yoshida's going nowhere this year. Nobody will take that contract.
That's exactly what he did last season, and they weren't able to move him. He batted 285 last season when he came back, and then he got injured again, and it's just the cycle.
Yeah, exactly. There are 29 teams in baseball, Jacob, are waiting for the Red Sox to just DFA the guy so they can get him for free. They know that they don't have to pay for him or pay the contract. They're just waiting for the Red Sox to have to make the roster move, which is why he was put on, you know, Fantasy Island for half a year until he could finally come back and play now that Devers is gone. So he's not going anywhere. I do think Marcelo plays second next year as well. That's fine. As much as I think he should play short, I think he's going to play second. But play him every day or stop wasting his time. Marcelo Meyer is not going to get any better sitting on the bench in Washington today, just like he did yesterday. And oh, but the offense has been so great with him on the bench. That was for like five games. It wouldn't have changed. They still would have scored 10 runs if he was in the lineup. I promise you that. That kid Parker was going to suck whether Marcelo Meyer was playing second yesterday or not. I promise you that. 617-779-7937. Jeff in New Hampshire has been waiting patiently. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. What's up?
So, full disclosure, I used to operate one of the largest Red Sox websites going.
Okay.
I had issues with this ownership group, shut down the website after 15 years, and I am not a fan of this ownership group at all.
Sure.
Okay. That said, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to posit a perspective to you, and I'd like to get your feedback.
Sure.
I think this ownership group, I think Dave Dombrowski blew it with Mookie Betts. I think he should have traded him the trade deadline before.
Okay.
He was traded. I think the Red Sox ownership looked around, saw what Tampa Bay was doing, saw what Andrew Friedman did when he went out to Los Angeles. And by that I mean build a core of build your roster with a core of prospects, and then fill in with free agencies, trades, whatever else have you. But your core was going to be affordable, under control, young players.
Right.
The Red Sox, because of Dombrowski trading away the core of prospects we had, some good trades, some bad trades, but he gutted the prospect system.
Sure.
The Red Sox were in a position where they had to constantly sign free agents and sign larger contracts. They exploded the payroll. They were in luxury tax hell. And I think they decided, I think they watched what Andrew Friedman was doing out in L.A. With the bringing up the prospects, developing the prospects. And I think they decided they wanted to do that. I think that's why they brought in Chaim Bloom. I thought Chaim Bloom was on the right track. I think he got a bum rap because everybody judged him over Mookie Betts. He did a great job drafting. He certainly had more of a interactive personality than Craig Breslow does.
Yes.
But so I think Bloom was on the right track. I think the Sox had to. They didn't have to. They did. They punted on him because they got a lot of heat from the public.
Absolutely. All right, Jeff, I had to let you go there at that point, but you made a number of great points. I want to revisit the Dombrowski comment he made. I want to also talk about just the ownership group and the model that he's talking about, the Andrew Friedman going out to Los Angeles model and where the Red Sox maybe were trying to get to with that. There's a lot still on that bone as we continue to discuss the Boston Red Sox. We'll do that next here on WEEI. All right, back here on WEEI, continuing our conversation on the Boston Red Sox, 617-779-7937, the phone number, as well as the text number. Catching up on some of the texts regarding the many decisions roster-wise the Red Sox have to make. Bregman back, option Hamilton. This is from the 978, by the way. But Cora wants him to be a designated late-inning base stealer. Yes, I know. And that should not take up an entire roster spot, which is kind of my point.
Meyer can't field a ground ball either.
No, exactly. Thank you, Jacob. I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. And I know that he has a better defensive run save than Christian Campbell, but Campbell was the worst defensive second baseman in baseball when he was up. That's not a compliment. So if all I can do is have you steal bases, he actually bunted a couple days ago, which I appreciated. It was a lot better than watching him swing the bat. I digress. Meyer can back up three positions every day for the stretch run. He plays second versus right-handers. They're not screwing around. If Hamilton down and Meyer, who is the backup shortstop? Romy Gonzalez. Romy's your utility infielder, and Nate Eaton can spell wherever that doesn't go. I just, I want Marcelo. I want to make sure this isn't misconstrued. I want Marcelo Meyer to be your everyday second baseman. I want him to play, and if you want to give him a break against tough lefties, that's fine. This Ogasawara guy that's pitching today for the Nationals throws a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and a 70-mile-an-hour curveball. That's a lefty where you play Meyer. You don't want to play him against Chris Sale? Then fine. I'll give you that. With the, you know, a mid-to-high 90s fastball and a devastating breaking, you know, the stuff the best lefties in baseball you want to give him a break on? Fine. This kid and the kid Parker that pitched yesterday, that's not... You're doing it because the numbers say you need to do it. Let's just say the quiet part out loud. You're doing it because the numbers say if you have Toro and Romy and Ref Snyder in there, your odds are you're going to get better outcomes than if you have Marcelo Meyer in there, which I understand that that's how sample sizes work, but you're not doing it for the betterment of the player that's supposed to be a part of your core for years and years on end. Anyways, 401, very simple. Trade Abreu. I can't get behind that yet. Meanwhile, 978, Story is Gold Glove, 20-plus home runs. He will be the shortstop next year. I know he will. What happens when he goes cold, though, is just my point that I'm making on him playing shortstop.
Or gets injured.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yes, it's great now. It's fantastic now. He leads all, what is it, American League shortstops and home runs and RBIs at this point. Like, I'm very encouraged, and clearly... He's a leader, kind of the one of the clubhouse leaders, if not the clubhouse leader for this group at this point. He was first in line when they went and met the president. Like he is very much the kind of the frontward facing member of this organization. But we can't let 1 month forgive the conversations that we're having, and also have you forget what's supposed to be happening in the future for this group. So who sits when Yoshida DHs? He platoons at DH with Rob Refsnyder. Refsnyder against lefties, Yoshida against righties, and everybody has a Merry Christmas. Lastly, 646, Bloom should have been fired for trading Mookie for nothing back. And that was the point that that our last caller, Jeff, brought up as it pertains to the Red Sox and their, you know, the way that their ownership group operates and everything like that. The point on Dombrowski probably needing to trade Mookie before he ended up getting traded is a good one, because it is my personal opinion that regardless of what the Red Sox could have offered, I think Mookie wanted to test the market anyways. I kind of put him in the Juan Soto category, where there really probably wasn't an... it's just my own personal opinion that I didn't think there was going to be a number that the Red Sox could get to internally that would have kept Mookie from testing free agency. Maybe there wasn't, I would be wrong, but I never got the sense that he really wanted to be a Red Sox for the rest of his career without even testing the market. Maybe you offer him what the Dodgers ended up signing him to and he stays, but he would have gone to market. So I think there's something to the Dombrowski point, but Dombrowski was never going to be the guy that traded Mookie Betts. And unfortunately, Heim Bloom got brought in in a situation where the Red Sox already backed themselves into a corner, Rafael Devers backed themselves into a corner and had to make that move, and he got cents back on the dollar. I think there's something to what Jeff said about how the Red Sox saw the Andrew Friedman Dodgers model and wanted to try to mirror that. And I think Chaim Bloom helped them accomplish the first part of that. And I also think it's probably fair to say that Bloom may not have been the president of baseball operations for a Red Sox team that was going to go back to prominence and win World Series and whatever else. The difference between the Red Sox and the Dodgers is that for every Gavin Lux, there's a Marcelo Meyer. For every Andy Páez, there's a Roman Anthony. For every prospect, there's a prospect. But for every Freddie Freeman and for every Mookie Betts, there is, there's nothing. There is an Alex Bregman for now, and that's kind of their first dip of the toe into actually spending. You can't just draft and develop these cost-controlled players. They're extremely important on a 26-man roster, but you're not going to win a World Series if you only do that. I would really challenge anybody to go and find a World Series team that has only homegrown stars. The Rays have tried their hand at it, but by and large, every World Series caliber team has some guys that they have drafted and developed, and also the hired guns that you bring in, the veterans that help take the pressure off the young guys. That's something that's been bemoaned about this team all year, is that there aren't enough veterans around. You haven't surrounded your young guys with enough veterans to help quell some of these inconsistencies, and the fact that being a rookie is naturally a roller coaster type thing. So that is where I stand on the main difference and where I think the Red Sox and the ownership group need to be held accountable. Because if they did see the Dodgers move and wanted to do that, you have to understand that you have to be willing to spend money. I don't need you to spend $700 million deferred on Shohei Ohtani, but you have to spend something. Which is why I think the Alex Bregman conversation is a very fascinating one. The team is firing on all cylinders right now. Just leave it alone. I mean, I wouldn't have a job if I only did that. And then from the 617, Duran to trade, Anthony to left, the new Yaz, Rice, and Williams. Oh, boy. All right, let's set those expectations nice and high for what Anthony, Rafael, and Abreu would be for the Red Sox moving forward. All right, we'll leave that conversation there on the Boston Red Sox. Plenty more to get to here on WEEI. The Bruins, the Celtics, the Patriots, all on the table as we move into the 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk about those next.